Welcome, everyone, to this WESHEAR Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is preventing the SSL bugs as named Poodle, Freak, Bar Mitzvah, and Logjam, etc. The presenter is Bill O'Donnell. Bill is the Chief Security Compliance Officer and WESHEAR Application Server Security Architect. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Bill.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and I appreciate everyone joining our call today. So if we can advance the slides, please. There we go. This is just a normal disclaimer. So, again, a copy of these charts will be posted in the next couple days. I encourage you to go find those charts. I do have a number of links in this presentation. And so by getting the copy of the charts, it'd be much easier than trying to write the long URL names that I have throughout the charts. So if you can advance the chart again. Go to chart 3. So in here, I do have my email address. So if you were not able to get your question answered and you'd like to send me a private note on any question you have about today's presentation, certainly feel free to drop me an email. Again, it's bill.odonald@us.ibm.com. All right, let's advance the charts then to chart 4. All right, so today what I'm going to talk about is over the last 9 months, we have seen a lot of security vulnerabilities with SSL/TLS. And what I want to do today is talk about each one of them, what they are, what's the impact to each of those, and also try to give you a flavor of some of the service changes that we have made in the service stream for a number of fixed packs for WebSphere Application Server as well as the IBM HTTP Server, and some of the behavioral changes that you might be recognize. Towards the end of the pitch, after we've talked about the security vulnerabilities, I also wanted to spend just a few minutes to give you a little insight about some of the things that we do internally in terms of our processes to try to stay up current on a number of these vulnerabilities. And I wanted to give you a little inside view of what we do inside IBM to try to be as proactive as possible for a lot of these security vulnerabilities that you've been seeing as of late. So if we can turn to chart 5. So let's start off with our strategy, and this is very important for everyone to understand, is that our strategy for WebSphere Application Server is to be secure by default. That means that if there is a security vulnerability in the service stream that's significant, especially for these SSL vulnerabilities, we will go as far as actually changing our behavior defaults in the service stream when you put fixed packs on. It is our policy to normally not to change any default behaviors. But when we have situations like this where we have a public disclosure and a security vulnerability that will put your application server at risk, we will make changes as far as default behaviors. So it's very, very important that you are aware of this. And there is security bulletins that we do publish to notify you in advance that we have made such a change. And I would encourage everyone who's on this call today to note the link down at the bottom. We will actually send you an email if you sign yourself up to my notification as part of our support services, in which if a new security vulnerability has been published and we actually make a default behavior change, we will send you an email with the security bulletin, and we'll provide information such as, you know, what was the risk assessment, in other words, what was the vulnerability from a public disclosure perspective that had occurred, as well as we will let you know if there was a behavior change, and also we may even give you some information about how to revert back to the old behavior. We'll also include information as far as what service pack or fixed pack that this change was made, as well as we will publish individual iFixes in order for you to get these fixes installed on as quickly as possible. So please, you know, if you do anything today, make sure you go find our support site and register yourself to my notification to get these security bulletins on a regular basis. Let's turn to chart 6. So I'm going to spend a few minutes here talking through a number of security vulnerabilities that we've seen over the last 9 months. And the first one I want to talk about is Poodle. Poodle was a security vulnerability that was disclosed back around the October-November timeframe last year of 2014. This was a pretty big impact for most customers. It effectively impacted something called SSL v3. It's a old encryption standard that dated back to 1996. And in this particular case, there was no fix to the standard. The standard was fairly old. Some security researchers had been doing some research, and they have, you know, publicly disclosed some of the weaknesses around SSL v3, and they also published some information about how hackers can actually exploit this particular vulnerability. In this particular case, I'm sad to report that there was no fix to this. The standard was fundamentally broken. The industry itself, there was no real repair that could have done here. And so really we were forced into the situation where the industry as a whole had recommended that SSL v3 be disabled. A number of other vendors, not just IBM, but many other vendors also followed suit, where they all quickly published information and actually had gone out as far as actually disabling SSL v3. For some of our customers, it was uneventful. For others, there was some impacts where customers had some very, very old equipment that did not support the later standards. And so in the what we had offered as part of this is that we offered a configuration switch such that when you put the maintenance on that disabled SSL v3, if you just found some problems in testing, you had the ability to set this property to revert back. Now, the concept behind this, I want to make sure I overemphasize this, is that IBM's position and the industry position is that SSL v3 should not be used. We recognize the fact that by applying this maintenance, that if things break, that you may need the time to do the research and the analysis and work with other vendors to, you know, add the necessary support for the stronger encryption standards. And as such, you would be required to flip the switch, knowingly knowing that you're enabling SSL v3 and you're turning it back on. And so for anyone that found themselves in that situation where they had to re-enable SSL v3, I'm overemphasizing that it's very, very important that you continue to work, you know, with your vendors, IBM, or whoever it is, where SSL or TLS 1.0 is not supported, to work with those vendors and whatever to try to enable TLS 1.0, and then hopefully you can go back to disabling SSL v3. So the industry recommendation and the IBM recommendation is to turn off SSL v3. In terms of a couple of security bulletins that we did publish, on this chart you'll see that I have two links. The first one is for WebSphere Application Server for all the releases. It'll give you the information that you would need in terms of which APAR or which fixed pack you need to install, as well as there's some information about a property you can set to actually turn SSL v3 back on. In addition, our IBM HTTP server was also impacted, and same thing, the second link actually represents that, and certainly you can follow the instructions there if you have a need to turn SSL v3 back on. Okay, let's turn to the next chart, which would be chart 7. So moving on to the next vulnerability we saw, the next one we saw after Poodle was something called Freak. And Freak was an attack that was against something called the RSA export ciphers. I personally don't believe they were widely used, but then again, the security researchers have discovered, again, some weaknesses against any cipher that's that has the words RSA export in them. Similar to SSL v3, these were, again, very, very old, very, very weak ciphers. It's been sort of known for a while that they are. And, again, the recommendation from an industry perspective, there really is no fix for this particular set of ciphers. The recommendation would be is to disable them. There was also another side effect to this particular vulnerability, which was sort of interesting, that made this a little bit more challenging, is that on the client side, if you were trying to connect to a server that actually supported the RSA ciphers, then the client code was also impacted by a man-in-the-middle attack. So if a hacker somehow successfully performed a man-in-the-middle sort of attack, the hacker then had the ability to influence the transmission to be able to exploit the weakness of RSA export. And so because of that, we issued both WebSphere Application Server as well as our IBM HP server, which uses GSCIT. We issued a client-side fix, which effectively fixed the issue with a potential man-in-the-middle attack that may occur. So sort of two recommendations here for this particular attack, again, is number one, we highly recommend just not using RSA export ciphers. If you install the WebSphere maintenance, we will actually disable them for you by default. But in addition to, for any client-side SSL connection or TLS connection, there is a fix, and we delivered that fix, again, for Java, which WebSphere Application Server is delivered, as well as the IBM HP server. More information, again, could be found by the two links that I have specified there. All right, let's move on to chart 8, please. All right, after we saw the freak vulnerability, the next one we saw was something called Bar Mitzvah. This was, again, some security researchers were doing some research, and they have found and published detailed information about a weakness with RC4, which, again, is used primarily in ciphers. Similar pattern as before, RC4, again, is considered very weak, but what's different this time is the security researchers have actually published information about how to exploit this actual particular weakness. Again, similar, this is an old standard, and the same remedy here is that there are no known fixes for fixing RC4. And so the recommendation here, again, is to disable RC4. So we published a couple of bulletins again on this. The WebSphere Application Server is the first link. The second link is the IBM HP server. And again, we published some information there about disabling RC4. Also, you can put some maintenance on WAS to actually would force RC4 to be disabled by default. So again, I think the pattern you're seeing with a lot of these is that these are very, very old standards that are not being fixed, and the only remedy really is to just simply disable them, is what we've seen in the last three of these. So let's turn on to chart 9. Now, chart 9, this was probably a little better news than the other three. This had to do with the DH ciphers. In this particular case, there was a fix to the standard for this particular one. In our case, for IBM, it only impacted Java, or for our purposes here, the WebSphere Application Server. It did not impact the IBM HP server, which uses GSCIT, and GSCIT just simply wasn't vulnerable because they had the necessary code to address this particular vulnerability. So the particular problem, again, has to do with a man-in-the-middle attack where it's possible to downgrade the keys such that once you make the keys weaker, then it becomes fairly easy for an attacker to actually exploit this particular vulnerability. So the short-term remedy of this, of course, is disable DF ciphers, but then the long-term remedy would be is then to install some fixes that we have that will address the shortcomings of this particular attack. All right, let's turn on to chart 10. So the biggest question I get asked all the time, and I get this from customers as well as a lot of product teams within IBM saying that, you know, we've seen four of these particular security vulnerabilities in the course of the last 9 months. And what we've seen is security researchers have been going after a lot of areas of these old encryption standards that was commonly known to be weak, but no one really had taken the time to actually try to uncover the weakness of them, and that's what we've seen in the last 9 months with the four vulnerabilities that have been published. So the question really that comes from, that's asked of me often is, well, how can I get ahead of this thing? You know, it's a lot of work to constantly put on, fixes for SSL/TLS, and certainly it's a lot of work to constantly continue to disable things that are old. And so the key message here is that as an industry, we have been very, very dependent on some very, very old encryption standards. So today we're very dependent on TLS 1.0. TLS 1.0 has been out there since 1999, which is quite old. I'm here to tell you that, you know, it's also known that TLS 1.0 has some weakness shortcomings. We have not gotten any research papers yet to actually finally suggest that TLS 1.0 can't be repaired. At the moment, it's still considered safe. But I think the key message on this chart is that both the industry, the vendors, and customers need to start thinking about and working towards moving up towards newer encryption standards. And so one of the things I want to strongly emphasize here today is that one of the takeaways from this call is that call for action here would be is to examine your enterprise and make sure that you are taking advantage of the latest security standards that are out there. From a TLS 1.0 perspective, as you can see in the last four charts, we have pretty much gotten rid of a lot of the ciphers already that are considered now too weak to use. And so we are only left with two left, and that would be the channel block channel ciphers using SHA-1. Those are the only ciphers that are really considered safe these days. But again, my message here today is that there will come a time when we will finally, the industry will come together and say that this particular standard is going to go sunset at some point in time. So what do we got to do? So some of the solutions that I want to recommend is, number one, I want to call out that certificates, any certificates that you have in your environment today that are signed with SHA-1 is going to be problematic for you. In fact, later this year and perhaps next year, you actually will see the browser vendors will be pushing out some maintenance to the browser releases that are out there, and they will begin to start warning you that SHA-1 based certificates are no longer considered safe. And so one of the takeaways that you're going to have here is that to examine your certificates in your shop. If you purchase certificates from a public CA, chances are you're already using SHA-2. The public CA vendors have pretty much been pushing SHA-2 for a while. But if you have any certificates that are internally generated, you might want to examine to make sure that they are using SHA-2 and not SHA-1. Now that I think of it, I apologize. I probably should have included a link on this page. But if you go off to Google, the WebSphere Application Server has published an article on this. And so if you search on WebSphere Application Server SHA-1 Certificates, you should see a hit out there where we do discuss from a WebSphere Application Server perspective what it is you need to do to make sure that you're using SHA-2 certificates. The second recommendation I want to make today is the certificates should be using 2048 or higher. That is our default that's been in the product since WebSphere 8. So just confirm that you are using 2048. The other bigger change that I want to promote today is moving towards TLS 1.2. Anyone who's running WebSphere 7, 8, or 8.5, or who's running the IBM HP Server 8.0 or 8.5, you have the ability to enable TLS 1.2. You actually have the ability to set up the server side so that it supports TLS 1.0, 1.1, and 1.2. The reason for opening up all three of those is that If your client tries to connect with a higher level, such as TLS 1.2, they'll use it. But if you have some clients that are still not supporting TLS 1.2, then the SSL handshake will actually negotiate down to TLS 1.0. But one of the things that, you know, I'm highly recommending today is that for everyone on this call who's in the support side, to make sure you have a grasp and understanding of how to enable TLS 1.2, as well as examine your enterprise and try to identify areas where TLS 1.0 is being used and try to change that over to TLS 1.2. The good news is from an industry perspective, I would say over the last few years, some of the browser vendors, even in the last 4 years, Microsoft in particular, I think was the first vendor, they have been now supporting TLS 1.2 from a browser perspective. And so that's the good news. The bad news is that for any of your customers that are still relying on old versions of browsers, they very well may not have the TLS 1.2 support. So there's going to be somewhat of a balancing act here that you're going to have to work through. All right, the last bullet. It's bolded. It probably should have been up on top. It is on the bottom of the chart, so let me make sure I highlight it. Anyone who's running WebSphere 6.1 or earlier, that would include WebSphere 6.1, WebSphere 6.0, WebSphere Application Server 5.1, 5.0, or any of those old releases, they are, from my perspective, from a security point of view, they are not safe anymore. Those releases have been in service extension mode for quite a while. Some of those releases you can't even get a service extension for anymore. But they do not support TLS 1.2. They support TLS 1.0. And so today I'm here to say that I'm highly recommending that any customer who is relying on WebSphere 6.1 or earlier, it's in your best interest to try to put a plan together and begin the process of trying to migrate to newer releases. I certainly would highly recommend jumping all the way to 8.5. That's what many, many customers that I work with have been doing, is that they'll jump from 6.1 all the way to 8.5. And that's because this way you don't have to deal with, you know, someday WebSphere 7.0 may very well go out of service. So by at least jumping 8.5, you'll be good to go for quite a long time. And so that's the recommendation there. If anyone wants to discuss the concerns about 6.1, certainly drop an email. I'm more than happy to talk to any customer that would like to talk further about the security risks associated with 6.1 and earlier. So then to recap, the security risks that I'm concerned about for 6.1 and earlier is the encryption standards are weak. And then the second concern I have is that the Java itself is no longer getting any more security fixes. The normal Oracle CPUs are not coming out anymore against Java. So there's no way to get any security fixes for Java. So that would be the second reason I'm concerned. All right, enough of that. Let's move on to chart 11, please. All right, what I want to spend the last three or four charts is I wanted to give everyone a sense of what we do in IBM internally. I think from a customer point of view, all you see is we push out a security vulnerability, et cetera, but I wanted to give you guys a little bit of an insight of a lot of the things that we do. I think there's two reasons for me doing this. Number one, I think it's good for all of our customers to know what we do internally. Secondly, there are some practices that we actually do with our own code that perhaps you might find interesting that maybe might be some practices that maybe you might want to adopt in your own organization as you develop your own applications. So let's move to chart 12. Let me just step through some of these things. First off, our goal. So here's our IBM goal and our strategy that we use not only for WebSphere Application Server, but this is also true for all products across the IBM organization. All right. Our goal number one is to be secure by default, and I think you saw evidence of that already in this pitch, where when we have a security vulnerability that's a public disclosure and it's quite serious, we will go as far as actually changing defaults in the service stream to keep things safe. The second goal that we have is we want to be as proactive as possible, and you'll see some charts coming up that, you know, early in our development cycle, we're doing a lot of work. But also, once releases get out in the field and things change, like with SSL standards and so forth, our strategy is to be as proactive as possible. We'll deliver bulletins. There's a lot that we do to stay on top of these security vulnerabilities. So, again, two goals, secure by default and be as proactive as possible. Let's move on to chart 13. So this is a picture of all the different things that we do. If I were to encapsulate everything into one chart, this would be the view. And so starting off at the upper left-hand corner labeled IBM X-Force, in IBM we actually have a research team. We call them the X-Force team. And they are a dedicated team, and all they do is they do security research around vulnerabilities. They stay on top of all the trends. They stay on top of a lot of the risk and many aspects around security vulnerability. They certainly are part of the community of other researchers that are doing research to, you know, find other areas of weakness and so forth. So they're kind of our pulse, if you will, in terms of what's going on in the industry. That group is responsible, you know, not only they put out papers to customers, they have some really good articles about trends and directions that they publish all the time. You can certainly go to their website and look at that. But they also feed into the development organization. We get a lot of good, valuable information from them in terms of where things are going, and we will take that information and we will adjust. And we'll adjust whether it's something we have to do in our own development cycles or if it's something that we have to adjust in a service stream. We use that information to, again, be our proactiveness in trying to stay on top of a lot of these security vulnerabilities. All right, down at the bottom is, and we're going to talk more about this, but we also have a secure engineering practice, which is part of our full development life cycle. So from the time that, you know, we might get requirements from you to the time that we actually turn those things into design, coding, testing, and finally delivering, there's elements of our secure engineering that crosses all those disciplines. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that, I think, in some coming charts. The other part on the right side top corner is we also have to make sure our source code is protected. We do a lot of things to make sure that our code doesn't get tampered with. So any code that comes in from open source, there's a lot of work that we do to make sure that code hasn't been tampered with prior to delivering our products. We do a lot of malware checking. There's a number of different aspects that we do to make sure that the code, by the time it's delivered to you, has not been maliciously been tampered with. And then finally down at the bottom, that's the thing that you probably see more often, is we have a process called PCERT, which stands for Product Security Incident Response. And again, that process has to do with our notification process regarding security vulnerabilities. When an incident gets open internally, there's a lot of pressure from our that comes from this team for us to try to deliver fixes as soon as possible, especially for those things that are public disclosures. And again, everything that I'm talking about in this chart is not just for the app server itself, but this is really for all products across IBM, both hardware and software. All right, let's turn to chart 14. All right, so I did mention earlier that we do have a secure engineering practice for our development lifecycle, and this is just a picture to articulate that. So the secure engineering practice and process that we have starts at the time that we have some open source that we refer to as supply chain. Any code that's coming into IBM, there's a number of scans and code analysis that goes on to make sure that code is safe. We have a full development process that we have that, again, starts from the time of getting requirements through coding and testing that we certainly follow. And so really this chart is really trying to articulate that in IBM, every aspect of the development lifecycle certainly has some aspects of secure engineering that we have available in IBM. So turning to chart 15. So one of the areas that this is worth mentioning is that anytime we are going to start some sort of development lifecycle, the first thing we will do is we'll start with a risk assessment. We have a database that defines all the various risk factors if you were going to develop some type of application. So, for example, if I were to say I wanted to develop a web app, in this particular database that we have, it will highlight here are the 10 things that you need to make sure that you're aware of at the time you're designing, at the time that you're coding, and at the time that you're testing. And so our risk assessment that goes into every single one of our projects starts here, and it helps develop and make sure that as we're going through our life cycle, that we're certainly following all the right things from a best practice perspective. The source of this stuff comes from something called CWE, and I do have a link out there if you're interested, where in this particular website, they have documented a lot of the common weaknesses that are out there, and it's a very good website that we use. Certainly, if you, again, some of this information is if you're developing your own applications, this might be worth something taking a look at. It has a lot of valuable information based on the type of application you're building. It will give you some suggestions in terms of here's the things you need to be looking out for. All right, turning on to chart 16. All right, as far as there is a accreditation that we have gotten for WebSphere brand, something called the Open Trusted Technology Provider Standard. And I have a link to their website, and I would encourage everyone to take a look at it because there's a lot of real good things about if you were to develop your own application, there's a lot of good information about here are a number of the standard best practices that you should be following. So from a WebSphere application or from a WebSphere brand perspective, not only do we follow this, but we've also had a third-party independent contractor come in to certify that we actually do follow a lot of these practices. So if you're really looking for the blueprints of IBM secure engineering practices, you certainly can find, you can go to this website and you can find a lot of the best practices we certainly follow in IBM. And again, this is just our evidence that we've been accredited towards this particular standard. Moving on to chart 17. This standard really started back in 2009 where a number of vendors came together and said, you know, we need some way to assure our customers that we're doing all the right, you know, best practice engineering things. And that's pretty much where this thing had started from. So turning to chart 18, I've actually listed a number of the vendors that were part of this particular standard. Turn the chart. There you go. Yeah, so on this chart, list all the vendors that were part of that particular standard. And so you probably recognize a number of the, you know, cast of characters you would imagine were in here, including IBM. All right, let's turn to chart 19. And so this is just a recap of what this particular standard covers. And, again, to say this in a few words, again, it's really around the whole life cycle from the point in time designing, building, coding, and so forth. There's a number of different best practices that that are out there. And, again, I would encourage you all to take a look at it and get a good synopsis of what we're trying to do. All right, let's turn to chart 20. I'm trying to leave some room here for questions. Chart 20. This is just a list of the types of things that are in this particular standard. So I'll just read off some of the important ones that I think in there are certainly risk management. Do we have proper access control? There's stuff about, you know, hiring people. How do we deal with supply chain? There's a vulnerability analysis report, threat modeling, secure engineering practice. So there's all these different things that are all part of the standard that's covered here in the OTDPF certification accreditation. All right, let's go to chart 21. All right, this is my last chart, so I wanted to give you some reference information. So if you want to learn more about the IBM secure engineering practice, we have a red book that's out there, and the first link would cover that. The second link we have is if you're interested in IBM's engineering practice from a website perspective, we have a link there that sort of describes the very aspects and things that we're doing. So I encourage you to look there. The third link has to do with The software lifecycle research paper that I would highly recommend you taking a look at. And then finally, the last link is actually just our evidence that we have been accredited to the OTDPF accreditation program. So if we turn to the last chart, should be our thank you chart. One more chart. So this chart, I just wanted to give you an idea of we've been measuring our success. So looking at the first quarter of 2015, 52% of the vulnerabilities that we found in IBM products, and that's not just WebSphere, it's across all IBM products, 52% of them were proactively discovered by IBM. 9% were reported by customers, and the remaining 39% of the vulnerabilities came from some sort of open source or third party. Okay, and then chart 23. And so, again, the conclusion here is, again, our strategy is to be secured by default. We're going to do everything we can to be proactive. I think hopefully you've picked up from this pitch. There's a lot that we do to try to be proactive. And certainly, I would encourage everyone here on the customer side to, you know, pick up these security bulletins. And I think it's important for everyone to be proactive on the customer side as well. All right, and then hopefully chart 24, our last chart. There you go. So I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you very much, Bill, for a great presentation. Okay, now it's time to move on to the Q&A session.
Excuse me, speakers. The first question from the phone is coming from Lukesh. Sir, your line now is open. Please proceed.
Hi, Bill. This is Lukesh from DTCC. I have a couple of questions, and thanks for putting together all these vulnerabilities, which is great. So my first question is the SHA-1 family that is going away sometime this year, next year. We were seeing some flashes coming in that there is a converting utility that if we are using the default certs within the VAS that comes from 7 and above, we can use those to convert using the inside managing the FIPS. But we have also the infrastructure, which is VAS 6.1, and we are trying to see how we tackle those, and we are in the process of migration at this point.
All right. So for 6.1, we won't have a conversion utility. You'll have to do them manually. The plumbing for us to have a conversion utility, actually, a lot of the infrastructure was there starting in VAS 7. So a lot of the work, you know, behind-the-scenes code is not there in 6.1. So the best way of doing it is really manually. I thought, and I could be wrong, but I thought our intent was to try to give you some instructions on how to do that. If that's not the case, why don't you drop me an email, and I will try to find some links or something for you. But it is going to be a manual process for 6.1 to convert your SHA-1 certificates to SHA-2, unfortunately.
Okay, I will drop the email for that. And in regards to that, if we are going as an industry standard to SHA-256, going forward, would IBM is looking forward to see that removing the SHA-1 as part of any fixed packs so that the default certs are always going to be SHA-256? As of today, we are at the latest fixed pack 8556 on our systems, but we still have a default cert generated as SHA-1.
Yeah, that's a big challenge for us, and I certainly would welcome any input from customers on this. The problem we have is that the default right now is SHA-1, and we've had plenty of customers that have already installed the various releases. We have not come up with a good way of how to change that to SHA-2 without really causing some disruption. So at the moment, we've been hesitant to do anything in the service stream for that as kind of our current position. I'm open to suggestions here. Clearly, in any future release of WebSphere, we'll make sure that it's SHA-2. That would be our intention. But for things that are already in service, we're just very hesitant that if we did that, that we might break things. And so that's the only reason why we haven't done anything yet on that area.
Oh, okay. So I have a question on the Poodle vulnerability. So when the fixed pack has not been arrived during the time that the Poodle patching, we were going down to mitigate using the mitigation using the scripting. So we have chosen in the quality of production as TLS, which shows TLS version 1.0. So we have taken that option because we have different versions and flavors of WebSphere in our shop. So basically, we did almost like 6 months to get away with all of our servers. Now the fix pack came, and so basically, this TLS, even in 8.5.5.6 that we are on, or 8.5.5.3, some of them, will only support 1.0. And if I was checking with the PMR opening to see if this can support 1.1, 1.2, and I was asked that I need to drop down to select TLS version 1.2 to get all these three versions supported. It is going to be a bigger effort again. So would there be any focus from IBM to see, okay, TLS means it can support all three versions, whichever the client is negotiating with?
Yeah, well, we sort of do indirectly. So if you have the JVM fix, so there's a JVM fix, which WebSphere ships, right, in the service stream, which effectively disables SSLv3 at a JVM level. What that translates to, and I think this is fairly well documented in a security bulletin, but if you were to use the protocol alias of SSL_TLS v1.2, what that effectively means is that you won't have SSL v3 because the JVM's already disabled it, and you would end up having 1.0.1.1 and 1.2. If you needed SSL v3, then effectively you would get all of them because then you would set the JVM property to say, yes, please re-enable SSL v3 back up, right? But if you haven't played with that property, SSL_TLS v1.2 effectively means TLS 1.0.1.1.2. So I think you get the behavior you wanted to if you went that direction.
Yes, I understood that part, Bill. What we have done is we put effort for 6 months using the mitigation to state that as TLS. Now changing that SSL TLS v2, we understand that it would support only TLS, all the three protocols, but that's going to be an effort for us again doing that. So I was just checking to see if there is any other alternatives. So if that is the only case, yes, we would go forward with that, looking forward on that.
Yeah, I have no other changes coming up that would make your situation a little bit easier.
Okay.
All I can say is probably going to develop some scripts, and yeah, it won't be pretty. But, yeah, I don't have anything in my tool bag that's coming out anytime soon.
Okay. I have seen an article we are going to 8.5.6, and some of them are at 8.5.6. By having this increased encryption and decryption would overhead with the default SSL ciphers, and we were told there is a trade-off between a throughput, lower throughput, and higher CPU utilization, and it was not completely clear. And the resolution of the problem is you get trade-off because we are removing RC4 ciphers, and if we are going with default SSL ciphers, there is a trade-off on the other items. Can you a little bit elaborate what that means?
I don't have the performance numbers in my hands here. Certainly there's going to be a cost of moving away from RC4 ciphers to SHA-1. Now, if you were just using our default settings, you more likely were probably already using SHA-1 anyways because we typically are going to negotiate with the higher ciphers. So the impact may not be as bad. If you were forcing RC4 and now you're forcing SHA-1, I would anticipate some performance hit there, but I don't have any measurements that I can quantify how much it would be.
So does IBM is looking forward to get some benchmark in the lab for Linux or other operating systems kind of on this?
We did some measurements. The performance team had them, and the word I got was it wasn't significant enough to draw a lot of attention to it. So I am not aware of anything that's major here. I think I'm just suggesting that I would expect some. I'm not expecting a lot, right?
Okay.
But that's about all I can really comment on.
My last question I have is on the AES unrestricted JCE jars, the 256-bit. So we have 256 jars that we need to download and put it, and whenever we patch our JDK changes back to 128, and sometimes it's kind of like a post-check after the patching. Is there any plans that IBM would go for 256 jars, or would they leave it default to 128-bit for those AES unrestricted jars?
Yeah, so the that's a very good question. So so the if we look at all the import-export laws across all the countries, the lowest common denominator I can have is AES 128. There are some countries that do not allow for the use of AES 256. And so because of that, we have shipped that the most you can get is 128. If you are in the U.S., I know it's certainly, you know, okay to use. I don't have all the countries memorized. But if you're in a country that, you know, has no restrictions for AES 256, then, of course, like you said, you can copy the unrestricted policy file and move on. But for some of my other customers that may be in countries that has restrictions on it, unfortunately, that's why I have the guards in the code. The only real option for you is to, like you said, examine your import-export laws. If you're fine, then you have to copy in the unrestricted policy file, as you noted. So there's not going to be any changes for me on that. And at this point, my hands are strapped that I would love to move it to 256, but I'm not able to do that today until the, you know, some of these laws change in some of the countries.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. That's all I have. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for your question, your time, and your interest. All right, so I think we're ready for another question if one's queued up.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Luis Gonzalez. Sir, your line now is open.
Bill, just to get a clarification, you were referencing WebSphere and IHS 6X and lower. No, doesn't support TLS 1.1 and 1.2. 7.0, my understanding, doesn't support TLS 1.1 and 0.2. Am I correct?
Thanks for the question, and maybe I wasn't as clear as I wanted to be. So from a WebSphere application server perspective, if you're on 6.1 or earlier, it has no TLS 1.2 support, okay? If you're on WebSphere application version 7 or higher, you're fine. Now, it's a good question you asked, and I actually saw that in the chat, too. For the IBM HTTP server, the release is a little bit different. You have to be on 8.0 or 8.5 to get the TLS 1.2 support. If you're on the web server 7.0 release, you will not have the TLS 1.2 support. So you're correct that for anyone using the IBM HTTP server, I am recommending that you move to either 8.0 or 8.5. I think they're fundamentally, from an Apache perspective, they're roughly the same anyways. But if you're going to make the move, I certainly would go to 8.5 just to be current. But if you're on 7 or earlier for the web server, you're absolutely correct. I do not recommend being on those releases because they only support TLS 1.0. They do not support TLS 1.2. And then also, while we're on it, I think I saw a question in there. Is there any plans for us to add TLS 1.2 support for the IBM HTTP Server 7? The answer is no. We have no plans to do that. Again, the recommendation would be is to move up to either 8 or 8.5.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. One last question. The RC4 encryption for IBM HTTP Server, I noticed is offering a GSKit 7.0.5.5 version. In addition, I'm looking at the website. Do you have to put those ciphers, or by default, it disables those ciphers?
You know, I don't know that for 7.0. So, and I wish the lines were open because I'm sure Eric's on the line who can answer that question. So I would say for now, why don't you drop me an email, and I'll get you an answer for that.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. That's the only question I have.
Okay, and Bill's email is, I think it's on both slide 1 and slide 3 of the presentation, if you need that. Well, the question came in from Minnie, and it was on slide number 6. Can you also add the Beast as well? And she references a CBC for Beast on IBM document, and they said it states that IBM's don't recommend taking these countermeasures. Our company security requires not to use RC4 and CBC. What should we do for IHS7?
Well, I hope I'm answering the question, but, you know, it's interesting. The Beast had came out a few years ago, and there was a lot of debate even back then about RC4 versus CBC, and now that you mention it, I suppose it's probably worth me going back and see what we documented a few years ago as far as recommendations. The time had changed, of course, once we got into, you know, this Poodle and some of the other ones that had come out where the recommendation for RC4 had actually changed. So I'll certainly take an action here to go back to the Beast documentation we have and see if things need to be altered. But in terms of where things are at today, and again, this space changes every day because there's just new security research that comes out and we're trying to respond as best as we can. But the security research as of today is suggesting that, you know, RC4 is not recommended anymore, and we are recommending right now to disable that. CBC did have some fixes to it a couple of years ago. I think if you're on current fixed pack levels now, you're probably fine because, like I said, I think those fixes went out a few years back. But there was some shortcomings in CBCs, but we had fixed them. So as far as today goes, from an industry standard perspective, we're still saying CBC is okay. Again, there was some fixes to it, but that's a few years ago, and hopefully folks have already got those installed now. And so the recommendation would be is to not use RC4, and the CBC, you know, base ciphers are still, you know, considered safe. And again, I'll overemphasize that today they're considered safe. So, and it is part of the TLS 1.0 protocol. So, you know, same recommendation I think we've been hearing is certainly a strategy should be is to try to move to the TLS 1.2. Elliptic curve is kind of really where the way to go if you want to be the, you know, the safest. But, you know, not everyone supports elliptic curve yet. So it's kind of a balancing act. So if you're going to follow, you know, the pathway for today's recommendation, CBC is fine as long as you have current maintenance. RC4 is, again, considered not safe anymore and is recommended it be turned off. So if I've answered your question, fantastic. If you have a follow-up on that particular question, either post something on in the chat or send me an email.
The next one also came in by 6, and it was from Angie. It says, instructions for ZOS are not in the flash. They are not on the Z security portal.
Okay.
I guess that's not a question, but more of a statement.
Hi, Angie, if you're out there, good to hear from you. So Angie is from our L2 support, and she just wanted to make sure that if there's anyone on this call that's from the Z community, that some of the documentation for Z Pacific is actually posted in what's called the Z portal, which is a place where you can pick up security information regarding ZOS. In all of our bulletins, we do talk about, you know, if you're a Z customer, you'd register yourself to the Z portal. So that information is available in any one of our security vulnerabilities. And so I think to echo what I think Angie is trying to suggest here is if you are in the Z, make sure that either you or someone in your organization has registered with the Z portal, and then hopefully you've pulled all the necessary information you have in every single one of these vulnerabilities we've talked about today or any other security vulnerabilities that may be pertinent to ZOS. Okay?
Now, Minnie has posted something since you last spoke there, and that had to do with the Beast question. The comment was, our vulnerability testing results show that CBC fix doesn't fix the problem. We still get an alert for it.
Yeah, so open up a PMR, send me a note. You know, if you don't have the latest CBC fix, that could be part of it. But, you know, like I said, to choose between CBC and RC4, they're both very weak, but right now the industry is saying RC4 is bad. So it sounds like Meaning, why don't you just get connected with me in email and we can talk through this. So I don't know if it's a situation you don't have the latest fix on, or maybe you just have a tool that's maybe not quite up to date on the latest trends of this stuff. But right now the industry recommendation, this is not coming from me, this is an industry recommendation, is no RC4. So that's all I can tell you at this time. All right, next question.
All right, and the next question came in from Dave Fletcher when you were on slide 10. Question was, what about Domino 9.x running Travelers 9.x?
I do not know the Domino releases. I do know Domino had fixes that were delivered to support TLS 1.0. That's about all I know with Domino. And there's too many releases in IBM for me to memorize every version known to mankind in IBM. So I would suggest that person to just drop me a line, and we'll get the actual release levels you need to be on. I just don't have it memorized here today.
The next question came in on slide 13. Is the SHA-2 actually the only possible option for TLS 1 version 2?
Pretty sure we support SHA-2. Wait. This is certificates or ciphers. So if it's SHA-2 certificates, there's two different pieces of SHA-2. There's the SHA-2 certificates and there's the SHA-2 ciphers. So if we're talking about the SHA-2 certificates, you can certainly, use SHA-2 certificates with TLS 1.0. So that's not a problem. If we're talking about the SHA-2 ciphers, I believe they were introduced as part of the 1.2 specification. Hopefully that's addressing the question.
And also from the same user, do we have a list in IBM that states which WAS JRE versions support which protocol? And do we have a list that shows which protocol versions support which cipher?
It's there. It's not probably in the form that you would like it. Certainly, it may be worth me putting on a tech doc, since this is important, so I'll take that as an action. Buried in our documentation, I think you'll see, and I'll just give you the verbal answer, from a IBM Java's perspective, the 1.2 came in at Java 6. If using Oracle Java, I believe, don't quote me on it, I think it was introduced in 7. If we're talking about the WebSphere application server release, again, that came in with WAS 7, which really was using Java 6. And then I think, as we mentioned already earlier, for the web server, again, that was first introduced in 8.0. So if you look at the product, if you look at each one of those product announcements and doc, you'll kind of see it buried inside there. But I think it's a good idea, since it's such an important topic, that I'll take an action to see if we can formally publish something like this on a single page so that you can see it. So hopefully that helps.
This one came in, and it referenced back to slide 7. On slide 7, mentions RSA is too old. Does that only concern the ciphers used with JCE policy?
I think what you're asking, which is a really good question, actually, what I'm referring to is RSA export ciphers. I am not talking about the RSA signing algorithms, okay? So I think that's a very good question. So if that's what you're asking, then the point of clarification is if you have a cipher that has the names, RSA, I don't know how else to make it simple, but RSA export in their name, then we're recommending those are bad. But that is not the same as RSA with SHA-1 or RSA with SHA-2 from a signing algorithm perspective. RSA signing algorithm is still considered safe and fine today.
The next question from Minix: is there a way to fix weak ciphers in IHS7? Are you saying that the only way to fix is to move to IHS8 supporting TLS 1.1/1.2?
Yeah, so some of the, many of all good questions. I think if we're talking about, like, some of the ciphers that I had recommend just disabling completely, it doesn't matter which version of the web server you're on, that's just the recommendation industry. RC4, as we've already talked about, is certainly one of them. And then going the other side of this is when we look at the protocol side of this, and we're debating between TLS 1.0 and TLS 1.2, again, I think I may have already answered this already, but I know your question was posted earlier, and I think you already know the answer now, is that the only way to get TLS 1.2, unfortunately, is to move to the web server 8.0 or 8.5.
Question from Naveen, and this is many at times. Vendors provide scanner software flag vulnerabilities on client platforms. They do not list the software for which the vulnerability is flagged for, nor do they provide a CVE ID to associate with the vulnerability. My question, in such a situation, is it right for support to expect a CVE ID to reference the claim?
Those are good questions. So I certainly cannot defend the scanning tool you're using. If it's an IBM scanning tool, then we should, and they're not providing the CVE numbers, I'd be surprised. I thought they actually did, but if it's the case they don't, we should probably post requirements for that. From a product side perspective, any vulnerability that we publish, we always have a CVE to it. So any vulnerability, the CVEs that we would assign to any vulnerability would be either one that came from a public, like SSL is a good one, like Logjam had its own CVE, and then we would just use that number in our reference material. Or if we found something internal to our product, we will open up the CVE. The CVEs all come from a single source that many of the vendors and industry uses, but certainly I will tag every single one of my vulnerabilities with some sort of CVE number, as well as there's something called a CVSS score, which is a standard set of questions to try to determine whether something is a low or high. The number ranges from 0 to 10, or 0 is low and high is 10. So from a product support delivery perspective, we provide both of those pieces of information. From a scanning tool perspective, I can't speak for them unless it's an IBM tool, and certainly, you know, I would agree that it would make sense for the scanning tools to at least give the CVE number if they've found something. But, again, I can't really defend that. So I think it's a good question, but maybe it's just easier if we talk offline. All right, next question.
The next question is from Davo, and it says, is there any way to import the new Cypher suites into WAS instead of editing the security.xml file?
First off, I would recommend to you is that in the WebSphere configuration, WebSphere application server configuration, we have four settings. You can say high, medium, low, or custom. If you stick with high, which is the default, you will see that a number of the fixes that we've been delivering is we've been adjusting for you automatically what high means. And so, for example, when the RC4 recommendation came out, we pushed out a fix that basically made sure that the RC4 ciphers were no longer listed and the RSA export weren't listed, so there would be no action required on your part. On the other hand, if you have decided to configure custom, then you have pretty much said that, you know, you're going to specify your own list. And if that's your situation, then the only options you have is either log on to the admin console and change the list, or secondly, there are scripting commands which you could use. And then the third option, which you recommend, which I would actually recommend against, is you could edit a security.xml file directly. I'd rather you didn't do that. I would rather you used our scripting if you were looking for an automatic way of running around updating all your servers. So scripting would be my recommendation if you are in the custom list business. But ultimately, what I would expect and recommend for all customers is to just set it to you want high, and then we will continue to update what high means as we learn more and more about the various security researchers that come out, in the past 9 months. But more importantly, if we get any new recommendations, we'll continue to update that high list for you through the service stream. So hopefully that answers your question. Again, follow-up questions through email is fine.
from Robert. Is there a way to test if all these security fixes are applied okay and the vulnerabilities are fixed?
That's a very good question, and I get asked this question often. I think the best way for customers to confirm is really just make sure that that particular maintenance level is on. When you install patches, you pretty much get a number of different messages and so forth that tells you what fixes were applied. For test, if it's a public disclosure and the researcher decided to publish the test case, you certainly have a right to grab that test case and test it on your own. If it is a IBM fixes, we actually have a policy that we do not want to start publishing information about details of a security vulnerability, let alone a test case. And the reason why we have such a strong stance on that is that while from a view of, hey, I want to test and make sure perspective, which totally makes sense to me, the side effect of that is the fact that if I publish test cases, then I'm really just catering to the hackers who will just grab that and they'll blog about it and they'll just, you know, cause havoc. And so we've seen that already with some of our customers when a malicious person decides to publish the test case, and all of a sudden I get calls from frantic customers saying my web server is going up and down, I can't keep it up. And so we're trying to avoid that. If I had my way in life, I would rather be in a position where here's the Sakona vulnerability patch to put on, take your time, get it on, take the month or two you need to do, and be done with it. And so that would be my preference. And the only way we can do that is by IBM not feeding the bad guys out there by publishing test fixes. Unfortunately, we've seen enough of these where we do get these public disclosures, and I think everyone's feeling the pain that when someone does a public disclosure, everyone then is jumping through hoops to try to get things installed as quickly as possible. And I'd rather get away from that. And so I guess, again, long-winded answer, it's against our policy to publish test cases for the various reasons I've just described. If you'd like to debate me on that, I'm more than happy to, accept an email, and we can cover that over email if you'd like. So,
this is from Aniket. Why WebSphere 6.1/7.0 security fixes are targeted at client-side vulnerabilities only, rather than both client/server-side vulnerabilities?
Okay. Yeah, so I think you're probably talking about one of the slides I was talking about. So the word client and server is an interesting term. So clearly, with all of our binoculars on the phone, we see WebSphere Application Server as a server, and that's correct. But when we're talking about SSL, the word client and server really depends on who's opening up the socket. So there are times that, like the web container as an example, will open up the socket, and it's considered from an SSL perspective to be server-side. And so that would be considered a server-side from an SSL perspective. There are other cases in WebSphere Application Server where I might develop an application, and now my application decides to open up a socket to go outbound to make some web services a REST call. In that case, for that particular SSL, that is considered client side. And so from a WebSphere Application Server, we do at times have to install client side fixes because we are technically the client of the SSL connections, especially any time that we're going outbound. So in the particular fix that we were talking about, there are cases in SSL where the fix only applies to the client side, and then there's cases that I've seen in the past where the fix actually only impacts server side, and then there's been other cases where a fix may impact both the client side and server side of the SSL connection. So long story short, in terms of what I presented today, a number of the recommendations were just disable the cipher or the SSL V3 protocol. But one of the fixes that we had in the DH cipher, I think is the one you were talking about, that one only had a issue if I am a client side. And as a result, you saw it documented as a SSL TLS client side fix. And so in that particular case, any software that ever acts as a client, and WebSphere can act as a client when we're going outbound, then that's where that fix would apply to and you need to get it installed. So hopefully that makes sense. And like I said, it's confusing, but I think you have to try to understand when we say SSL, what side is the client, what side is the server. And again, the server is always the one that opens up the port and so forth. So hopefully that makes sense.
We have another one here from Anakit here. How can developers put reins on SSL ciphers and SSL protocols when making a client to serve SSL connection without hard coding the explicit IBM WebSphere cipher name? For example, we have a developers on Java 5 WebSphere 6.1 who connects to a server using DHE cipher. However, with recent IBM patches, bar mitzvah fix, SSL DHE DSS with RC4 is disabled since it includes RC4 cipher name in it.
I'm going to take a stab at this. So, and if I didn't answer the question right, my apologies, but please send me a note. So I think there is this phenomenon that SSL could be kind of complicated. I think we already know that. But it is possible for a developer to open up a socket, and it is possible for them to specify which protocol and ciphers they want to use. So that's theoretically possible. And it is also possible for them to hard code these things. And so in these cases, it means that they're not leveraging any of the WebSphere stuff. I know a lot of customers try to leverage our APIs so that the WebSphere application server configuration can control these things. But if a developer decides that, no, we don't really want to use any of the WebSphere's SSL configuration techniques and they want to go roll their own, they certainly have the ability to do that, I'm afraid. We did make a interesting change when we rolled out the Poodle that if anyone had hard-coded the SSL V3, we did automatically convert them over to TLS. We did that because there was a lot of customers, vendor code, et cetera, that had this hard code, so we certainly took care of that situation. But we haven't done anything proactively on the ciphers. So I think in that case, the only answer is if developers decided to hard code these things, they're going to have to take responsibility to change them.
At this time, there are no more questions, so we will conclude the presentation. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Bill, for presenting. You all have a great day.
Take care. Bye.